off. I keep our legs laced. His eyes slowly open with a sharp breath, and he's looking at Luna. She's looking at him, concern welled up in her amber gaze. He tries to marbleize his features, tries to be her strong, unshakable big brother. These parts of him are so intrinsically Maximoff Hale that I wouldn't want him to change. He loves people so overwhelmingly, and he cares. Shit, he cares more than anyone. And when people need him to be their everything, he is always there. But it only makes me want to be there for him. Every time. Every day. Twice as hard. 10 times as much. Maximoff, I breathe, capturing his focus. I lightly shake the sports drink at my boyfriend. What I plan to do from the moment I uncap the plastic bottle. I'll share with you. And only you. His eyes fall to my mouth, and then he quickly snatches the drink. I notice how he doesn't attempt to talk. Maffy, Charlie calls. Our heads turn, and I reluctantly split my attention between Maximoff and 11 other people. A few pillows prop Charlie's broken leg, and Donnelly leans over his cast, black Sharpie in hand. He's sketching the Philly cityscape, and to be honest, I'm surprised that Charlie is letting him. His cast has been blank. Yeah? Maximoff asks, voice tight. I survey the attic in one sweep, the room loud with chatter. All 11 people lounge on sleeping bags, but since they're elevated on the air mattresses, everyone is basically eye level with us. The three girls sit beneath the curtained window. Sully braids Luna's hair while Jane talks breezily and sips a beer. Near the dresser, Beckett is telling the Oliveira brothers about New York clubs, Donnelly listening in as he draws, and next to the girls, Jack is showing Akara a photo or video on his camera. That doesn't shock me. Jack and Akara have been more civil since the fan con. Thatcher is the only one observing and not in a group, his back up against the door. And no, I don't care. Charlie slips on dark sunglasses. You look like shit, Maffy. If you'd just... I'm not taking a Vicodin. Maximoff combats, and then winces. An ice pack slides down his shoulder. I fix it for him since the sports drink occupies his hand. Jane says something to her brother in French, and he raises one hand in surrender. Conversations pop up around the room, and I hear the tail end of Oscar talking about the worst flavor of Doritos. I tune everyone out and hone in on Maximoff. He's pinching his eyes, and he readjusts himself, starting to slide back off the headboard. Shit. He's not upset about Charlie nagging him. He's physically hurting. More and more. He's even willing to lie flat and advertise his pain. Before the ice packs slip, I remove them from his body. His shoulders sink onto the soft mattress and his head finds the pillow. Eyes closing. I stroke his hair out of his face. He shifts his head on my thigh and he tries to roll towards me but can't with his bandaged shoulder. His left hand quakes, distressed tears wet the corners of his eyes. That's it. I have to do something. Spreading my legs, I pull Maximoff carefully between them, and I reach for the ice packs, placing one lightly on his chest, one below the red sling on his abdomen. I already know it's not enough to extinguish his discomfort. With his head on my lap, I wipe the wet corners of his eyes with my thumb. More conversations ignite in the attic. Some about the We Are Calloway docu-series and others about the auction. They're all good about not drawing attention to Maximoff. The fact that he's this vulnerable, head in my lap, in front of them, is the clearest sign that he's not doing well. Maximoff drops his shaking left hand from his face, and he grips my bent knee in a vice, combating that post-op pain. His cheekbones sharpen when he clenches his teeth, and he tries to bury his face into my thigh again. Fuck, I have to do more. I have to. And I've been hesitating on one option because I don't know how he'll react. I love safeguarding the good in Maximoff while also being the one to loosen his tight laces. It sounds contradictory, but to me, good isn't straight-edged. Good is compassion and love for all people, for humanity. Good is a selfless kindness so unadulterated it stings your eyes. If there's anything I know, it's that the offer I'm about to make won't hurt his morality. It will just take away his pain. And I need him to believe this, too. I comb his hair back one more time, and then I dip my head down to whisper against his ear, "Can I shotgun you?"
11. Maximov Hale. Can I shotgun you? The hammering pain inside my bones dulls as my brain processes those four words. Can I shotgun you? It sounds sexual in my head. Maybe it's the way Pharaoh said it, his voice quiet but rough, but silky smooth all at once. Or maybe it's because I have no goddamn idea what shotgun entails. I know about calling shotgun in terms of a passenger seat in a car. And I've seen a guy puncture a hole in a can at college and shotgun a beer, neither of which seem that relevant right now. So I'm lost and too inexperienced to make complete sense of his question. I swallow a ball in my throat. I can't even get any words out. A stabbing sensation detonates again and again. Fucking Christ. Imagine a non-stop sledgehammer banging on your bones and insides, and you can't cast the sledgehammer aside. It just slams and crushes. Ignoring this torment, it's close to impossible. I clutch Pharaoh's knee in a death grip. God, I'm nearing a point where I just want to pass out. I need this to end. I need this to end. Donnelly, Pharaoh calls. And to distract myself, I try to focus on things that my brain loves, like Pharaoh Keane's precise movements, how he stretches his arm out and takes something from his friend. I try to concentrate on his age. 28. 6 years older than me. I breathe through my nose at a sharp pain. Brain, you annoyingly love that he's older. Don't act like you're disinterested now. 28. He's 28. I shut my eyes for a longer second and open them slowly. Lying down between his legs with my head on his thigh, my view mostly consists of the ceiling rafters and Pharaoh. My head is in his lap as a song that plays too softly on repeat. That track should be blaring and drowning out I Feel Like I'm Dying MP3 and Fuck This Shitty Feeling MP3. Pharaoh bends somewhat over me, blocking the rafters from view. Pieces of his white hair fall to his lashes. This is a blunt, he explains, pinching the blunt between two inked fingers. Shotgunning is where you take a hit from me. You don't need to hold the blunt, okay? He's asking for my permission. Because he's a good guy. He'll tell you he's not, but he is. I think for half a second, and then nod with my chin, giving in to my body's pleas. I'm not as afraid of weed like I am Vicodin or Oxy. And it helps that I trust Pharaoh with my body. I'd never fucking agree to this without him. Okay. Pharaoh repeats in relief. And he collects a lighter that's thrown on my bed. I can't tell from who. But I just watch Pharaoh. Every damn movement. How he puts the blunt confidently between his lips. How he cups his hand around it while he strikes the lighter. How his eyes lock on mine. You wouldn't even believe how much this helps, just observing Pharaoh. Because for a fleeting second, I forget I'm in pain. And I'll take that second, even brief. Christ, I'll take anything. A flame eats the paper as he inhales. Blunt now lit. He blows smoke up at the twinkling rafters. After that, he spins the blunt backwards, the burning end facing his lips. I'm confused about how this works.
Suck in the smoke, Wolf Scout, Pharaoh tells me. That's all you need to do.
With two fingers, he places the blunt between his teeth, burning end in his mouth. The other side sticks out. And he leans over me again, lowering his head down. Down. Until the paper is an inch from my lips. Our mouths are lined up like an upside-down kiss. His large hand sheathes my jaw, protectively, comfortingly. His other palm rests on top of my hand that death grips his knee. Pharaoh has told me how cinematic we are together, and I realize that I didn't fully get it. Not until now. Not until this blissful, out-of-body moment crawls to slow motion, and our intimacy intoxicates me, dizzies me, fills me to the brim. And I haven't even inhaled a thing yet. I could freeze frame this second for eternity, but it plays out. With the burning embers in his mouth, Pharaoh exhales. Smoke billows from the unlit end, and I breathe in. A silky line of smoke trickles down my throat. I cough. Fuck. He lets go of my jaw to take the blunt out of his mouth, assessing me, and I try to relax and adjust to the new sensation. Smoke plumes around us, the smell more pungent than cigarettes, and Pharaoh draws back down for another hit. He blows out, and I suck in smoke again, trying not to cough this time. My muscles unbind, and with a few more inhales, my hand loosens on his knee. I'm not spinning like the edible made me feel. Probably since pain is my current state. Slowly my joints ease like oil drips into every rusted crevice, and the torment begins to dull, pushed to the background. One more time, Pharaoh says to me, his husky voice too damn sexy. My brain starts tuning into the Pharaoh 69.1 radio station, volume on blast. For once, thank you, brain. Pharaoh is careful not to burn himself like he's done this a billion times, and he lowers his head again. Now I gain enough energy to move my hand off his knee. I clasp the back of his head, gripping his bleach white hair between fingers. When I inhale the smoke, I see his lips curve upward. He plucks the blunt out of his mouth, leaning back against the headboard, and he eyes me deeply. Did you like that? He asks. I breathe better. Not more than you, I say, gritting down as I use one hand to sit up. The cool ice packs fall off my chest and thud onto the bed. My first move is to go to grab them, with the wrong hand. God damn it. Pain infiltrates, and I try to remind my subconscious that my right hand is firmly bound in a sling for a fucking reason. In a good distraction, Pharaoh breaks his legs open a bit wider, and I slide back until my spine meets his chest. His arm curves around my bare waist. At nearly the same height, our broad shoulders frame, almost parallel. Before I ask for the blunt, he's already passing me it, knowing that I'd want to try on my own. I take a normal drag myself and my throat burns, but I force myself not to cough. I pass it back. Pharaoh takes another drag too, and then he reaches out and hands the blunt to Donnelly. I'm now unconscionably, totally, colossally aware of the 11-person audience. Most of them pretend to be interested in Cape Cod chips or the mound of pillows on sleeping bags, but their eyes dart over to us and land on me. I thought they'd look surprised, that I'd smoke anything, but like Pharaoh, they all seem relieved, happy that I'm not suffering. Blue eyes shimmering, Janie tips her beer towards me and cheers. If I didn't have Pharaoh, she'd be next to me, not wrapped up in a blue blanket beneath the window. But I'm more assured than ever that Janie wouldn't be able to fill Pharaoh's spot in my life, just like he can't replace hers. I need them both. I want them both. When Jane finally reached the hospital before my surgery, she broke down. My voice kept cracking and she couldn't stop rambling about the mathematical probability of life and death, and how she should have been in the car with me. Tears leaked out of her eyes, and then we agreed that we'd survive this. We can survive anything with a bit of luck, and a whole lot of love. In the quiet but crowded attic, I tell my best friend, Je suis vivant, ma moitié. I'm alive, my other half. She smiles into a sip of beer. Je ne voudrais pas de toi d'une autre manière. I wouldn't want you any other way. Pharaoh's heartbeat thuds in a calm rhythm against my back, and we both see Luna perk up from her sprawled, face-planted position.
Does this mean you'll get high with me, Mafi? Luna asks, head propped in her hand.
Ever since the fan con with the pot cookie debacle, I'm still forever processing the fact that my little sister has smoked weed before. My brows cinch, thinking about a situation where I'd want to be high while she's high. I'm fine with her smoking if she's careful, but I want to be coherent in that instance. Not a chance, sis, I say truthfully.
Not even right now?
Luna taps her nose, since I'm out of reach and she can't tap mine. The gesture we did as kids that kind of means, hey, brother, hey, sister. Then she swings her gangly arm to Donnelly for the blunt.
Nah.
He finishes the blunt himself. Four locos and weed don't mix. He blows smoke off to the side.
Damn it,
Luna mutters and says to me.
Next time.
I smile, feeling how much she wants to stay close to me, and I know letting her move in was the right decision. Now I just have to figure out if letting her do this auction is a decision I'll regret forever. Lights off by 2 a.m. Everyone has crashed and fallen asleep in my attic bedroom. It's pretty much what happens when you endure a massive doomsday and stay up late talking. I can't sleep. I was conked out for so long after my surgery. Now my mind is wide awake and playing mental catch-up. Talk to my brother later. A porn star bought you. Jesus Christ. Protect your brother. Protect your sisters. Protect everyone. Always. Don't let Pharaoh go. I won't. Marry him. Put a ring on it. What if he's not into marriage? What if that's why he rejected his ex's proposal? But we talked about kids. Twice. Jokingly? No, it was fucking serious. I think. You can have kids without being married. Don't name your son Batman. I squeeze my eyes shut. All right. My mind can shut the fuck up now. I think I'm the only one awake until the clock hits 2:30 a.m. And I hear whispering from the right side of the room. It's not Pharaoh. He's dead asleep, turned towards me, barely stirring beneath the comforter. I try my best not to wake him. Pharaoh needs shut-eye more than anyone. His inked arm splays over my lower abs. I didn't realize how badly I'd want to lie on my side until tonight. I crave to just turn into his hard chest. But here I am, stuck on my back. If anything, it makes me want to speed through physical therapy that much faster.
You can't go on Sunday anymore?
Sully mutters more loudly than she realizes. As much as I wished for bionic hearing as a kid, I don't have that superpower. I strain my ears to catch the reply. Sorry, Jack whispers, sounding really apologetic. My mind swerves onto one track. Jack Hyland is awake while my little cousin is awake, and everyone else is asleep. I have no clue what that means, so I prop myself on my usable elbow and peer over Pharaoh to see. My brows scrunch. Akara is awake too. Both guys lounge on the same air mattress, leaning on the brick wall. Right in between them, Sullivan slumps on a donut-shaped pillow and twists her frayed string anklet.
Oh, hey, you don't need to fucking apologize,
my cousin whispers not as softly.
It's all right.
Even in the dark attic, she looks noticeably bummed.
Rain check, Jack whispers. I should be free next Sunday. We can go swimming then.
Yeah,
she nods, scooting up more against the wall.
That'd work.
Akara is playing with her chocolate brown hair, and he coils a long strand over his upper lip in a fake mustache. Sully cracks a smile and shoves his chest. I used to overthink their dynamic because in my personal experience with Pharaoh, teasing equals affection. But that can't always be the case, right? Now I'm being paranoid. But for Sully's sake, I can't Hulk smash anything that makes her happy. I won't. And her friendship with her bodyguard is pretty much centerfold. Akara laughs lightly and whispers to Jack. She thinks she's a mermaid. You know, no swimming for 1 week means her legs grow back.
Hey, there is some fucking logic in the mermaid debate,
Sully tells Akara.
I love water. Mermaids love water, therefore I am a fucking mermaid.
Akara ties a piece of her hair in a slipknot.
Sharks also love water. They do, Jack agrees. And eels, stingrays, manatees. Salmon, Akara whispers. Walruses.
Hey, maybe I'm a fucking walrus then.
Sully jokes in another loud whisper.
I could also be a mermaid too.
Akara loosens the knot in her hair and gives her a look.
You're not a walrus, Sol.
My elbow already aches from the crash, and being propped up this long isn't that easy. But I strain my muscles for another second. Sully smiles softly.
Want to go swimming this Sunday, Kitz? Just at the hail pool?
Akara winces a bit and scratches the back of his head. He glances at Jack. Jack is staring at the Omega lead like they're in on something that she is not a part of. I can't help but fucking glare. They haven't noticed me yet. Probably not able to see me well since it's dark and Pharaoh conceals most of my build.
What?
Sully frowns, looking between them.
Come, shit. That's your day off work, Kitz. Fuck, I'm sorry. You can do whatever.
This isn't going well. And I can tell my cousin is scrambling for the right thing to say. She does this, and then she'll just go quiet.
It's not that, Akara says. Well, it kind of is. But Jack and I have this thing that day.
What thing? Sully nods slowly.
Like a production security thing?
Exactly what I'm thinking.
No, Akara pauses. Jack is friends with two girls from Penn that we're going out with, he whispers.
It's a double date thing.
Huh. That's good that they're finding time to date. I know it's been hard for most of security. But the more I scrutinize them, the more I can't read Sully's expression. Maybe because she's not sure what she's feeling.
Oh yeah,
Sully frowns, fingers to her full lips in deep thought.
Yeah.
She shakes the cobwebs out of her head.
That sounds fucking fun. You deserve some P in the V action. We can do whatever, swimming or, you know, anytime. And Mafi will swim with me. Or not, since his injury.
She winces at herself, and then slumps down.
So,
Akara whispers.
Eat that ass!
Great.
The drunken street heckling wakes a quarter of the room. As Philly bars close, the jeers will escalate. And you know what? It irritates the fuck out of me this time. I don't care that my family and security can hear. I care that Eat That Ass has woken up my boyfriend, who's been majorly sleep-deprived. Pharaoh slips his arm off me, eyes fluttering open into a glare aimed at the window.
Lick Maximoff Hale's wounds!
My jaw sharpens. Pharaoh combs a hand through his white hair, and I sit up more. He puts a hand on my leg. I read his gaze quickly. Don't rush outside. And I spot the heat in his brown eyes.
They're pissing you off? I ask,
both of our shoulders propped against the headboard.
Yeah.
His brows lift at me.
You just had surgery. You don't need this shit right now.
Neither do you, I say strongly. Pharaoh sweeps the length of my build, combing back his messy hair for the second time. He opens his mouth and...
Lick his hole!
Pharaoh rolls his eyes. My scowl darkens. And Oscar is on his feet, staring hard at the curtained window. Jane and Luna wake beneath it, and when Akara starts texting, I realize all of the room is now alert and agitated. They look to me, to Pharaoh, back to me. And I tell them, welcome to my attic.
Maximoff!
A drunk guy slurs.
Suck my cock after you suck Pharaoh Keen's!
No.
Beckett is giving the window a bigger what the fuck face. Sully cringes.
This is fucked up.
Donnelly stands and shuffles between the air mattresses, trying to reach the door.
No.
Akara points at him, still texting.
No one do anything yet. Don't turn on a lamp. They'll be able to see the room light up from the street.
Donnelly listens and stays put, and Thatcher towers at a stance, guarding the exit. Oscar studies the window again.
We could tell these drunk fucks that this isn't Maximoff's room. Get Jane to call out to them.
No, Thatcher interjects. Then they'll start harassing her.
I can do it,
Luna offers.
This can be my room.
My sister starts peeking beneath the curtain. Luna, don't, I yell. And before I try to slide off the bed, Janie is already pulling my sister away from the window panes. Paparazzi wait on the street nightly. Camera lenses are constantly pointed at my window, and there is a 100% chance of hecklers with a shower of ridicule tonight. I don't want that for any of my family or SFO. Quinn adjusts the curtains, the room fully obscured from the street. Pharaoh eyes me and twists his silver rings.
Pharaoh! Maximoff! Who's the bottom?
I glower, blood boiling. Oscar quickly heads over to Jack and Akara, speaking hushed to both of them. I'm putting Pharaoh in this fucked up situation. If he weren't in a public relationship with me, no one would shout that on a goddamn city street.
Who takes it in the ass?
Are you fucking kidding me? I'm about to stand, but Pharaoh draws me back on the bed. Swiftly, he turns sideways and tenses his legs over mine, caging me.
Don't let that shit bother you,
he says easily. And in his peripheral, he's watching SFO figure out a plan.
Because my natural instinct is to defend you, Wolf Scout. And I know yours is to defend me. But we're a target together, and we have to take some of these hits.
He stares deeper into me. Some of these hits. Not all of them. We both have our limits. But these hecklers shouldn't be a breaking point. This is easy in comparison to what else could be thrown at Pharaoh. My chest rises. People have always tried to hurt who I love. My parents, my sisters, my brother, all of my fucking family. Attacks from online, from on the street. And now, the world knows that I love Pharaoh. You know that I'm in love. For real. All I want is to protect him, and all he wants is to protect me. It's been our motto since the damn start. But Pharaoh is used to people mocking me, hating me, shitting on me. I'm not used to seeing him beneath a burning spotlight that leaves scars. This isn't easy, I admit.
I know,
he says, like he's met this irritation, this frustration and anger time and time again while we've been together in private. When he's not allowed to bare his fists to protect me. Just take the hit. I tilt my head back, my sore muscles begging me to relax.
Right his dick!
Pharaoh raises and lowers his brows in a teasing wave. I lick my lips, heating up in a better way. Never happening. He cocks his head and whispers,
it's definitely already happened.
Has it? I feign confusion. He rolls his eyes into a short laugh, and then he notices the same thing as me.
Cobalt, what the hell are you doing?
My best friend straps a sequined purse across her granny jannies. She has a switchblade and pepper spray in there, and we watch her quickly fit on fuzzy cat slippers.
Janie, I call out, already figuring out why she's angry.
We can post an Instagram video. You don't need to confront them on the fucking street. Jane ties her hair in a low pony. There is a bold line, Mafi, and these fools have crossed it.
They're drunk fools, I remind Jane. They're here to incite one of us. That is what they fucking want.
I've said all of this a million times to myself, right before I land a fist into a heckler's jaw. Sometimes these facts feel meaningless, but we have to repeat them for each other. For ourselves, or else we'll all go out of our goddamn minds. Charlie and Beckett watch their sister carefully, but they don't stand up and join Jane. She unzips her purse and procures her pepper spray canister while marching to the door, guarded by Thatcher. Jane reaches him and lifts her chin since he's a whole foot taller.
Excuse me, Thatcher, but there are people I need to have words with on my best friend's behalf. Move aside.
Yeah, all right, I'm smiling.
Thatcher never budges.
I can't, Jane.
Put your dick in him,
Pharaoh suddenly reaches for the bedside drawer. For a condom? No, there's absolutely no way he's grabbing a condom. Jane clears her throat.
Mr. Moretti, she tries again. I need to go break a few dicks. Can you please step aside?
Her angry face crinkles her nose.
No.
Maximoff Hale is gonna fuck a porn star.
The attic goes silent. No one is speaking. Pharaoh's jaw ticks. That one got to him. I go rigid. The auction news has probably made headlines, and I just haven't checked the internet yet. I've been unaware of how the whole world perceives my relationship with Pharaoh, purposefully. But now I think about the porn star. I think about what people must be saying online, whether they're calling my relationship with Pharaoh a fucking sham, or not monogamous, or maybe they just think I'm cheating. I don't know. And now I need to know. So I can defend my boyfriend with a tweet, an Instagram video, and an airplane banner over the Pacific Ocean. While Jack, Oscar, and Akara near the window, most likely with a plan that doesn't involve the last resort, call the cops for noise disturbance. I search for my phone under the covers.
What are you doing? Pharaoh asks.
I find my phone tangled in the sheets. Looking at the internet. Pharaoh seizes my phone.
We'll look together. Downstairs.
He climbs off the bed, standing. And as he combs his hair back for a third time, I realize he has something serious to tell me. In private. I stand, the pain in my collarbone thumping more consistently more than a half hour ago. Pharaoh rounds the bed, careful of the air mattresses, and Oscar wrenches the window open. Jack sticks his head out with Akara.
Maximoff isn't here, Jack shouts. Production is setting up for the show. You all need to leave, or we'll be calling the police for noise disturbance, Akara threatens.
Akara Kitsuan!
A drunk girl shouts.
Protect me!
Akara yells one more threat, and then leaves the window. Annoyance lines his forehead. I can't imagine how frustrating the lack of anonymity must be for SFO. As Jack closes the curtains, they all discuss waiting to see if the heckling worsens or dies down. I cut in front of Pharaoh before he reaches the door, just so I can tell Thatcher. We're just going to the kitchen. I need more ice. Thatcher nods, no argument, and lets us pass. 12. Maximoff Hale. We're in the kitchen pantry. I'd say that I led us here, but I clearly trailed behind Pharaoh, broken collarbone and all. I'm slower, but right now, I'm not as frustrated about it, and he's not teasing me since we're dealing with heavier things. Waist deep in quicksand. I swear we can't catch a break. Pharaoh tugs the string to the ceiling light bulb. A warm glow casts on cluttered wooden shelves, stocked with cereal boxes, protein bars, candy, and crackers. We both agreed on this spot. The pantry is the quietest place in the townhouse. Pharaoh and I have fucked against these shelves more than once. Rough enough that as I pounded into him, soup cans fell to the floorboards. No one upstairs heard. And with the door locked now, our voices shouldn't echo up the staircase. So it's climax-proof. I hold out my left hand for my phone that's still in Pharaoh's grip. He rests his elbow beside a half-open box of Pop-Tarts, not relinquishing my phone. He tilts his head at me.
I meant it when I said let's look together.
I don't stand next to him yet. Pharaoh, just let me be the one to check the tabloids. He frowns.
You realize I've dealt with internet trolls calling you, my boyfriend, a sack of shit, a dumb fuck, a spoiled bastard, and much, much worse. I couldn't do a fucking thing. And still, I'm standing. I haven't broken down yet. So what the hell are you protecting me from, Maximoff?
Pharaoh is used to internet trolls harassing me. But it's a different feeling when the unwanted opinions are about us. Street hecklers are my kryptonite, I admit. Then I gesture to his chest. grating, unsolicited commentary about our relationship is going to be yours. Pharaoh is close to shaking his head, but he stops himself and looks up at the pantry ceiling. Cringing slightly, eyes reddening, he rubs his mouth a couple times. We've been around each other every waking minute for almost a whole year. I know him. I fucking know Pharaoh like he knows me. He will tell you that he has no best friends. He has two that he treats like brothers. He will say that he's an open book, but it's a book he only allows his boyfriend to open. His casualness reads to some like indifference. Yet he lives to save people. He's independent and self-reliant, but he seeks out companionship and love. If he says you're good people, he'll surround himself around you, and you'll be glad. Because he's the kind of man who puts his whole soul into what he loves. And if he loves you, God damn. So, when his eyes fall back to mine, I say, I know you. You can barely stand Beckett prying in our relationship. You think you can stomach the entire world? Pharaoh touches his obsidian earring, contemplating for a millisecond.
You think you can stomach it?
He asks me.
It's not like you've had a public relationship before me. I'm your first. Hopefully your last. You've never experienced this shit either.
Hopefully your last. I hang on to those three words, unblinking at him. Pharaoh is trying to read my expression at an alarming rate. Is he nervous? I think he's nervous. It makes me 10 billion times more nervous. My pulse accelerates, heart beating out of my chest, and Pharaoh's breath quickens like he's running the same marathon. He sets my phone on a shelf. Are you still high? I ask.
No.
Pharaoh keeps sweeping my face for my reaction.
Not at all.
Same. I'm completely lucid, mentally shutting out any pain because I can't get over those three words. Hopefully, you're last. He wants to be my last, and he's not just saying this on the side of a road, thinking I'm about to die. He's saying this when we're about to face the roughest storm together. Pharaoh combs both hands through his bleach white hair, his chest elevating.
Maximov.
Am I your forever guy? I just ask. His eyes are bloodshot, so much emotion slamming into him, then me, and he says,
I don't want to scare you off.
You're not scaring me. I shake my head repeatedly, my pulse on a skyscraping ascent. He drums a shelf with his fingertips, prolonging whatever you want to call this moment. When he does speak, each word comes out like 50 tons of brick that he's wrenching forward.
I'm afraid that if I say anything else, I'm going to fucking lose you. We can do this another day.
Why the fuck would you lose me? I cut him off, brows furrowed. He leans his weight back.
We're really doing this right now.
He realizes. Yeah, unless you'd like me to overthink for the next millennium. His mouth stretches.
I wouldn't take that long, Wolf Scout.
But the fleeting smile completely disappears as he processes what he needs to say. His gaze slowly rises to meet mine.
See, you're 22, and I'm only your first. And there is better than me out there. Shit, even Oscar is waiting for you to realize it, and I've dumped my fair share of guys. For the first fucking time, I'm the one terrified.
He stops himself short, eyeing me hard.
You look petrified.
I clear my throat. This is me looking nervous, I tell him. My brows cinched and my eyes a bit wide. I'm actually scared to lose him in this whole conversation. Maybe that's why we prefer joking around than having serious talks. It always takes us a while to reach the center, but we usually find a way. His smile starts widening to new, profound levels.
I've seen you nervous plenty of times. That's not it.
Not plenty of times, I retort. Sometimes, a few times, no times, Less than you.
Pharaoh laughs, and then, as the sound quiets, our eyes melt against each other.
There's no one better than you, I tell him, assured about this. And I get why you haven't brought this up before.
I nod to myself a few more times, and I stop there.
Pharaoh waves me onwards.
I feign confusion.
Isn't it your turn?
Pretty sure it's your turn.
He rolls his eyes, but they land on me as he says,
So you must know you're brick-walled when it comes to future shit, particularly our future.
I nod strongly, highly aware.
I think about how to say this perfectly, but I don't think there's a perfect way. I always thought I'd never be in a relationship, for as much as I overanalyze my life, I never let myself imagine a boyfriend, let alone something more.
Pharaoh props his elbows on the shelf behind him.
I figured. But you realize you've had me for a while. Fuck, any time I mention marriage, even jokingly, you looked ready to piss your pants.
I grimace. Did I?
You did.
He nods. I'm not right now. I rake my hand through my thick hair. A pained groan tangles inside my throat. That fucking hurt.
A sharp pang stabs my bone. Even raising my good hand pulls my bad shoulder sometimes.
Careful, Pharaoh whispers, concern deepening his voice.
Something swells in my chest, but I continue on. I guess I didn't want to think about it before, I explain, because thinking meant overanalyzing, and for once, I just wanted to live in the present, with you.
Pharaoh nods slowly, understanding in his eyes.
But after the crash, I've been thinking a lot more about the rest of my life, where I go from here, and now I can't stop thinking about us and it.
Marriage,
he says matter-of-factly. Marriage, I say, with stubborn emphasis, not allergic to the word.
Yeah, I keep thinking.
I gesture to my head, more careful this time. Do you even want to be married someday?
Maybe you're not into it. Maybe that's why you rejected your ex's proposal.
No.
Pharaoh cuts me off, his foot kicked back on the shelf. He looks cool even when we're discussing life-altering, earth-changing topics.
Man, I want that commitment one day. I just didn't want it with him.
So he's into marriage.
Maximov.
He catches my attention before I stare into space, and he's already straightened up, no longer lounging against the shelves. He nears until our legs knock together, his fingers toy with hooking my fingers. And he asks,
What do you want, Wolf Scout?
He clutches my hand.
What do I want?
I can almost feel the rain from the crash site. Water kissing my face, and how Pharaoh hovered over me. How he painted a picture of our lives together. Decades. Longer. Which for Pharaoh means an expanse of time that lasts forever. I could have died happy inside that future. And I can't think of a greater sign than that. So I know. I want everything you said in the rain.
All of it.
Pharaoh easily recalls each word, and his eyes stroke mine in hot, tender affection.
That's good, because it looks like we want the same thing.
I inhale like I haven't taken a breath in eons. The one constant in my off-kilter world has been us, Pharaoh and me. Hearing him say that he wants to stand upright next to me, for the long haul, it's a goddamn dream. The corner of his mouth rises.
You're smiling.
He breathes against my lips before kissing me. One of those brief, teasing kisses that stings, aching for more.
I'm really happy,
I whisper, but my brows cinch at a thought. Strangely, since we're in a DEFCON 1 situation. Pharaoh nods and drops my hand, just so he can return to the shelves. He grabs my phone next to the Pop-Tart box.
Do you remember what I asked you? I try to rewind my brain, but all I remember is, hopefully, your last. A knowing smile edges across his face. I said that you've never experienced this shit either. You can't know how it'll affect you when you read about us. He makes a come closer gesture with two fingers and unlocks my phone with the passcode. I near him, my red sling rubbing coarsely against my chest. I've also had paparazzi and journalists ask about my love life since I was 14. Our eyes meet. I've dealt with speculations before. Maybe not about us, but I'm better equipped for this. Pharaoh waits to open a web page.
Okay, but I'm not sitting on the sidelines. I'd rather learn to deal with it than avoid it.
I nod. I can get behind that. He reaches for the Pop-Tart box.
That's because you love getting behind me.
Pharaoh tears open the silver individual pastry wrapper with his teeth. His smile, my fucking undoing. My blood heats, but I also eagle-eye the phone in his other hand. Let me prep you first. His brows shoot up.
Prep me.
I rest my hand on my neck, the strain in my muscle uncomfortable. It's what I used to do when I was younger. You tell yourself what people are probably saying before you see or hear it. That way it doesn't cut as badly. Pharaoh passes me the cinnamon Pop-Tart.
You would prepare. Pack your survival gear. Remember your life raft?
All right, I interject. I get that he's him and I'm me, and we'll handle every crisis a bit differently. But I had to offer anyway. So you don't want a raft, then? I take a large bite of the cold Pop-Tart. I haven't eaten in forever, and Pharaoh knew that. He must have also known that I wouldn't be as nauseous. My uneasy stomach is instantly grateful for the food. Settling down.
No raft, he confirms, typing on my phone. Let's just dive in, Wolf Scout.
I'm the better swimmer, so in this analogy or metaphor, I can save him if the current pulls him under. I wonder if he's thinking about that. I lean back, shelves digging in my spine, but my side is up against Pharaoh's, our shoulders nearly at equal height. He wraps his arm around my muscular waist and searches the internet with his other hand. Janie's cat scratches and meows at the pantry door, slicing into the short silence. Try Celebrity Crush first, I tell him. He types the tabloid site into the search engine, and as soon as we're on the homepage, we both read the biggest headline. Popular male porn star buys night with Maximoff Hale at charity auction. It's pretty generic. Something we both expected. I swallow the last of the Pop-Tart while Pharaoh clicks into the article. He scrolls really goddamn fast. Skim reading, and then he reaches the comments, slowing down. It's all a fucking hoax. Their relationship is hashtag fake. Ugh. Why would he let a porn star buy him if he's dating someone? Gross. They have no chemistry anyway. This just confirms it. He's only dating Maximoff to get famous. My eyes glaze over more of the same, and I do what my parents have always told me to do. I take a breath. Remember that they don't know me. They don't know us. Repeat it. They don't know us. Their opinions are just opinions, and they don't get to live inside my body and make my choices. The world watches my failures, my mistakes, and you criticize me in my relationship. But in the end, you don't have the full picture. Just whatever narrative you've created in your head. I glance at my boyfriend. He keeps scrolling through the comments, his cool exterior not shaken, but his eyes seem to tighten. So something's troubling him. I extend my left arm across his back and hold his shoulder. They don't know us, I tell Pharaoh. They'll never really know us. He pauses, scrolling.
I don't understand why they'd say that I'm in it for the fame. I've barely been on your social media so far.
Since I've been dealing with the auction, I hadn't posted a lot in the past 2 weeks. The pictures on my Instagram of him are the Lovers Like Us photo from my parents' vow renewal.
and one where he's cooking breakfast. I haven't even recorded an Instagram story with Pharaoh yet. They'll make up anything off nothing, I say. But I notice how he's fixated on another fame whore comment. That's what's getting to you? Pharaoh scrolls again.
It's all eating at me differently. But people questioning my intentions with you is probably my least favorite thing.
He glares at another comment on a different article.
I'm protective of you, Wolf Scout. And the thought of people believing I'm fucking you over.
His jaw muscle ticks. It's not sitting well with him. Before I can reply, Pharaoh adds,
See, I understand how this works. I appear on your social media more. I only strengthen there. He's in it for the fame bullshit. But fuck.
He lets out a deep, aggravated breath. There is no permanent fix. After being around my family, he knows this, too. People will always believe what they want to believe, and it'll hurt. With the rumors about my paternity, I felt like I needed to scream and scream for people to hear me. I still have to talk about the truth, how my dad is Lauren Hale, and I'll occasionally wear red to honor him. Like now, I consciously chose a red sling. But using my voice is the best thing I can do. It's why We Are Calloway exists. My sore arm falls to his hip. I was going to ask you to do an Instagram video with me. But if you'd feel better backing away from social media, I'd understand. I'd be okay with whatever he decides, since this is new for him, and since my world is the thing that's drastically changing in his life. I don't have to post pictures of us.
No,
Pharaoh says, shutting off my phone. He rotates to face me, resting his forearm on the shelf, and he opens his mouth to speak, but I'm already talking. Joining me in videos, posting more pictures together? It won't change public perception in the way you want, I remind him.
It'll most likely make it worse.
Pharaoh agrees.
I'm ready for that, Wolf Scout.
He runs his thumb over his lip piercing. You sure? I ask. Pharaoh notices me watching his hand, and his lips begin to lift beneath his thumb. He moves that hand to the back of my neck. His grip feels better than good, and his gaze plunges into me.
When I love someone, he says in a rough whisper, I love them proudly. And you deserve the achingly normal, romantic shit more than anyone. Everything you've never had. All the pictures you post, all the videos you do on your own. I want to be in them. And it'd kill me not to give you that. Especially now that we're public.
The declaration overwhelms me. I swallow the ball in my throat. And I zero in on how fast that was for Pharaoh. Just like that? I ask, my brows cinching. You didn't even think about it.
Because I do what I feel is right, not just what I think is right.
His hand ascends into my hair, and mine is on a descent to his back pocket. Pharaoh listened to his instincts, and I've been ignoring mine that have screamed at me for weeks on end. A sudden clarity washes over me, and I say, I'm canceling the night with a celebrity. Content with this choice. His hold on the back of my head is twice as protective, 10 times as comforting.
When did you decide this?
He asks, skimming my features for signs of what I'm feeling. Right now, I look at him. I've been fighting against what I feel is right. Anytime the night with a celebrity is brought up, it's like a parasite crawling down my body. I cringe. I can't put you through that fucking night. I can't put my sister or my cousins through that night. I don't care if you're all willing to go through with it. Something inside of me is pleading with me to just stop. Concern narrows his eyes. Pharaoh looks like he wants to hug the fuck out of me. But with my broken bone, he can only draw closer.
Maximoff.
He whispers my name like he's caressing each syllable.
Shit. If I'd known you were feeling like that. I thought you were just paranoid. I was that, too. What would have you done if you'd known? I ask, my eyes tracing the wings and crossed swords inked on his neck. I would have told you that if something is so parasitic that every instinct is screaming at you to stop, then stop. Because at that point, doing it isn't benefiting what or who you love, it's hurting something or someone you love. He runs his hand through my thick hair, and then I would have held you. I stare at his mouth for a second, my blood hot. Or I would have held you. Pharaoh doesn't play into the banter like usual, or even say we would have held each other. He's focused on the crux of my choice. You're going to lose your job for real. If no one goes through with the night with a celebrity, Ernest Mangold won't give me a second chance to be reinstated as CEO of HMC Philanthropies. It doesn't knock me backwards. I inhale a stronger breath. I think I'm okay with that. Something inside of me has changed. I can't tell you if it's being in love, or almost dying, or maybe I'm just getting older. But something in me is different. And being CEO of my company doesn't feel as important anymore. I also recognize that I'm leaving my family's wealth in the hands of a prick. But Charlie is still on the HMC board, and I need to trust that he'll take care of our families. I'm letting go. Are you okay with that? I ask him. His eyes brush my cheekbones. You look more unburdened. And now there's no porn star run-in. This is win-win any way you turn it. I think about Ace Steele. How he was a straight porn star. I don't get it. I wonder what Ace Steele wanted. You don't need to wonder, Pharaoh interjects. Off my confusion, he reaches behind his back and then he guides my hand that has slowly crept towards his back pocket into said pocket. The ass grab doesn't make sense until I feel the outline of a card. This is what Pharaoh must have taken from the end table earlier, which I theorized was a condom, not a condom, a business card. That dickhole told me what he wanted when we were at the auction, Pharaoh explains. It's why I wanted to talk to you in private in the first place. The topic just kept getting derailed. I read the card and immediately freeze at the name. Sensual Flicks. This porn company used to call me 100 times when I turned 18. I had to block their number. I look up at Pharaoh. His jaw hardens. I figured. Apparently they sent Ace on their behalf to convince you to do a scene. He said the company thought he'd be able to sell you on the idea since he's a sex worker and not a producer. I scowl. They really thought I'd fuck someone else, even though I'm with you? No. Pharaoh lets out a short, vexed laugh at the memory. He told me, and I quote, Sexual Flicks wants to film you fucking Maximoff Hale in the ass. And I said they could film me fracturing Ace's cock with a hammer. Since Pharaoh is literal a lot of the time, that threat or offer seems more real than mine would have been. Though, I think I would have just punched the porn star. My face twists as I process. So they spent millions of dollars on me, just for a meeting? In hopes that we'd agree to fuck on camera? And what, they hoped to make a profit on the video? It's an insane gamble. They couldn't get a hold of you, Pharaoh says. The auction was the only way they could even breathe on your fucking neck. If they thought they could manipulate you during the one-on-one night, it could have been worth it on their end. If my choice to cancel the auction nights wasn't already cemented, now it's marbleized, staple-gunned, and set to stone. It's never happening. I'm about to rip up the business card, but I only have one damn hand. So I crumple it in my fist. 13. Maximoff Hale. Things that royally suck with a broken collarbone. Wearing a seatbelt. Buttoning my pants. Taking a shower. Topping in missionary. It's not easy. Walking at a speed faster than a slow, unbearable pace.
C on every page, trying to keep up with Pharaoh Redford Keene. Typing on a computer, I look like a goddamn dinosaur. Riding in a car,